right, welcome back. Wow, another week, and we put our foot on Monday evening and get ready to step into Tuesday already as we are in the last week, ladies and gentlemen, of January of 2008, almost into the record books, and the year is off to one hell of a rocky start, to put it mildly. The financial crisis around the world continues to be estimated by many to be far worse than we've heard about, and I tend to believe that. From what I've been able to gather, and if you've been listening to the program, I think many of you will read into it as I do. Also, hopefully you've been following stories at Rents.com. On the featured story section of the homepage, look under the financial box, as it were, the financial catastrophe box. We have stories going up around the clock from some very sharp and very wise analysts. It is a big situation. Over on the hard news side of the page, where we present it all under headlines, you'll find a number of stories. And some of you may wonder, well, why so many stories about Palestine, Palestinians, and Israel, and the Middle East, and all that? Well, if I have to explain it to you, you're probably listening to the wrong program. But believe me, there are things going on there every day which are subhuman. They're non-human. They're inhuman. The planned genocide of the Palestinian people, the theft of their land, continues non-stop, planned, aided, and abetted, of course, by the Zionist State of Israel and its Washington lackeys and neocon supporters. This is an American policy as much as it is an Israeli policy, and don't kid yourselves and think it isn't. There are a number of stories in the first news blocks I'd like you all to read if you care about human life, and I hope all of you do. Israeli-created Gaza catastrophe is one. Israeli crimes in Hebron is another. It goes on. There are four or five of them up there. It is a story that is truly horrific. And yet, of course, the Zionist-owned and operated mainstream Western media looks the other way and actually forbids coverage of it to a large degree. I don't think that's an overstatement at all. With us once a month to talk about this horror and other issues of geopolitics in the Middle East is Dr. Hisham Talawi, who is back with us tonight. Welcome back, and I could say Happy New Year, but let me just tell you, it's nice to have you back.
Well, thank you for having me, Jeff. And Happy New Year to you. Of course, a whole month is already gone out of this year. It's unbelievable.
It is truly. Let me say one other thing before we start, if I can, Hisham. And I want to make this very clear. I think, a special compassion for all of our Jewish friends, our Israeli friends, who are every bit as appalled and grief-stricken about what the Zionist regime in Israel is doing to Palestinian human beings, men, women, and children, as we are. They are trapped, of course, because if they step out of line and begin to speak up, they are literally stepped on and kicked, literally and figuratively, by Zionist thugs who force many Jews to stay in line or else. And that's the truth. It is not just non-Jews who are appalled by this. I can't tell you how many of our Jewish listeners and friends feel the same way. It is an inhuman thing that is going on there, and it is absolutely unknown to 99.9% of the American people. Let's start to talk about this, and I guess maybe a few preliminary comments from you, and then I'd like to talk about the breakout by the Palestinians, who have been literally marooned and kept isolated out in the elements, basically, and their breakout into Egypt to get food. This whole thing, can you folks just for a minute imagine if this were being done by Palestinians against Israelis, what the world media would be doing, the response? Well, it wouldn't go on for more than 10 minutes, I assure you. Hisham, I've talked enough, so let's get into this and bring people up to date.
Well, of course, whenever you hear the American media or Western media, you will hear that Israel is doing whatever it's doing in retaliation to the Palestinian rocket attack. And whenever you hear that, you think those poor Israelis are getting wiped out with Hamas nuclear head missiles or something. People don't realize that these rockets, so-called rockets, is nothing but pipes, steel pipes. You know, when I was a DIN leader in Boy Scouts, we did a couple of those things. And, of course, you know, we had to go buy them at hobby stores, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, what you're saying, these are glorified bottle rockets, not much more. I mean, they certainly can't kill people, but they have no guidance, no nothing, and they can fire hundreds of them a day. But what is the Israeli casualty count?
Well, that's the thing. But let's talk about the great escape that everybody is thinking. It's really a myth when we look at it and we think about this great escape, because what had happened, Jeff, this is a plan. Israel had this plan a long time ago to basically get rid of Gaza. They don't want Gaza. They're not interested in Gaza. They're interested in the West Bank.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as you have Gaza and the West Bank, then there is a problem for Israel, because Gaza has 1.5 million Palestinians. Now, you talked about the human side of it, but when it comes to the Zionist regimes, you see, this the humanities is for, and moralities is for, people like you and I. But when it comes to the Zionist regimes, there's no such a thing as morality, or as if killing a child or killing a an old man means anything to them. Now, what had happened, Israel, for a long time, they wanted to basically destroy the Palestinian resistance. The Palestinian resistance for a long time had been the PLO and mainly the Fatah organization, which was basically the largest faction, and it's still the largest faction of the PLO. Now, in the first Intifada in the 1980s, like in 86 or 87,
mm-hmm.
Israel wanted an opposition to the PLO, so they encouraged very much the Islamic movement, which later on became known as Hamas.
Correct.
Now, they did not know that they were basically creating a monster there, but they created it. But apparently they knew that they were creating something that they can very much manipulate. Anytime you are the you have the upper hand, you can very much either force or manipulate the weaker party to do things that you basically want them to do, or force them to do things that you want them to do. And the first thing they did is they divided the Palestinians politically, which is you had the PLO, and then they created, or they helped actually create, or they did not prevent, mm-hmm. whichever way you want to look at it, the creation of Hamas and Islamic Jihad.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those two organizations are not part of the PLO, but they are becoming a force that you have to count on the Palestinian arena here. You can't ignore them.
So what they wanted to do, in a nutshell, was fracture the centralized support of the PLO, divide and conquer, the old game.
Right. So what they have done is they divided the Palestinians politically, and then when Hamas took over, I think we talked about when Hamas took over Gaza about a year ago,
mm-hmm.
We very much explained to everyone on your show that what happened in Gaza is very much to the benefit of Israel, where now you have divided the Palestinians not just politically but also militarily. Now, what happened in the last year, they very much forced the Palestinians. Number one, they had allowed probably about not even 10% of the food that was supposed to be going into Gaza. In the last 6 months, they allowed about 10% to go in. People were hungry. And then they have cut off the fuel supplies that feeding the electric generators.
Mm-hmm.
And those generators, those electric generators and turbines, basically, they stopped. The thing is, which is a lot of people may not know this, and I mean a lot of people who are knowledgeable enough, they know this. You know, Israel could have prevented this so-called great escape. I don't call it great escape. They had, you know, they have seen armed men or whoever planting these explosives by the wall. It took them 2 days to do that. Israel could have prevented this, but let's say Israel did not know, even though they have all these... I'll wait.
Very good. Stand by right there. Your point is extremely important. Those poor Palestinian people out in the elements don't do anything without the Israelis knowing. They have satellite surveillance. They have you name it. So quite right. Nothing caught Israel by surprise here at all. Back in just a minute with Dr. Hesham Talawi, PhD, as we take our monthly look at the continuing genocide and destruction of an entire people on the planet. Be right back. Back to Dr. Talawi. Okay, Hesham, the Israelis, of course, know every move the Palestinians make. First of all, just a very quick overview. How is it that these people are outside, stuck, isolated? What's the deal? And what was the barrier that they went through?
Are you talking about these walls that they...
Yeah. How many... So the Palestinians were enclosed in...
Very much inside a prison... collectively inside of prison.
Right.
What I was talking about earlier is that Israel, you know, if they are able with their unmanned aircraft to pinpoint a car driving in the narrow streets of Gaza City to hit these Palestinian leaders and assassinate them and blow them out of this world, then you would think that they will know exactly what's going on during the day, because they were not doing this at night. Hamas or whoever, these armed men who were planting these explosives by the wall, you would think that Israel would know what's going on, and they would send a couple of rapid intervention force to take care of the problem, or just drop couple of tanks in that area, and that will take care of the problem. But they did not do that. For 2 days, these men, these armed men, went to the wall, planted these things. Now, you have to understand and take things how the chronological order of how these things take place. Number one, these armed men who planted the explosives did that before Israel cut off the fuel supplies and those turbines stopped, because it was only one day when Gaza was out of electricity. The second day, that's when basically the wall came down. You would think that Israel had known about this, and even if they did not know, when the wall came down, all they had to do again is throw a couple of tanks in there, and none of this great escape would have taken place.
Right, I understand.
The other thing is, you know, when it comes to Egypt, you know, Egypt is supposed to be the strongest, largest, whatever, Arab country, and they did not take the initiative to open this border for the Palestinians when the Palestinians were hungry, were being killed by the Israelis. The power was cut off on incubators. They were cut off on hospitals. People, I do have reports that people did die, but apparently not too many people died in hospitals. That's why probably we did not hear of it, or the news haven't came out yet of exactly what happened. But apparently it was not a huge tragedy. Now, the tragedy has been going on for a long time. The killing has been going on for a long time. By bringing this wall down, of course, it averted a huge tragedy from happening. But the question is, what was the benefit for Israel with this wall coming down and the Palestinians going out into Egypt?
How many of them went into Egypt? Thousands?
About half a million. About half a million. What, 350,000 to 400,000. So that's almost half a million.
And the community they left was called
Gaza.
I mean, that was it. The whole Gaza area, that city, yeah. The city of Gaza. They left it.
Well, they are the city. Of course, yeah. They came from all over Gaza. There's Gaza City and there's the Gaza Strip. Now, the Gaza Strip has three or four different cities, but the majority of the population center is in Gaza.
And that is encircled with a wall, a large portion of it is.
Well, the strip is encircled with the wall, the whole thing.
Okay.
Not
so,
Gaza City.
So 350,000 Palestinians blow up the wall, flee into Egypt because they're starving. The Egyptians are stuck with them. The idea here is it as obvious as I'm beginning to see it now? This is one nice way to try to get rid of a bunch of people?
Well, that's what everybody thinks, but I don't think that. I think it's a nice way to get rid of Gaza completely because, you see, remember in the beginning I said they divided the Palestinians politically, then they divided them militarily. When you have Hamas is in control of Gaza, the Fatah is in control of the West Bank. Now, with what happened, you divided the Palestinians completely geographically and demographically. Because what will happen now is open the gates with Egypt, have some type of regulations for regulate the people going in and out of Gaza. And okay. Israel is completely out of that question. They do not need to negotiate over Gaza because Gaza, they have now all they have to do is worry about the West Bank. And since they have the West Bank exactly where it wanted to be, very much now they can do anything they want. That's what Israel's plan. It's not to keep those half a million and then close the, even though some people said, oh, well, they're going to close the border and then, you know, you have half a million Palestinian refugees. No. Most of these people, by the way, went back to Gaza. These people were hungry. Mm-hmm. They went in there. They bought out everything they can buy. And by the way, the Egyptians, to actually prevent people from coming in, they closed these shops in these two cities, Rafah and Larish, which the Palestinians were going and buying stuff from. They prevented products from going into those cities to replenish what the Palestinians were buying. So most of the Palestinians are back.
How humane of the Egyptians. How kind.
Of course. They're part of the whole thing.
That's beyond despicable. Back in just a minute with Dr. Tlawi as we continue. I'm Jeff Rentz. Thanks for being with us tonight. We have a fascinating segment coming up after the next half hour with Dr. Tlawi. We're going over to England to talk to Michael Roll and Steve Clark. Michael Roll, of course, has been on the program. I think this is his 12th visit now. He, of course, the expert on materializing mediums and life after death, ghosts, if you will. And we're going to talk about a lot of very fascinating things. This issue again is huge, and if it were happening to any other people, it probably would be mainstream news all the time. But Americans are in the dark; they don't know what's going on. Little boys are being shot to death while sitting in trees. Old women It's unbelievable what's been going on. And how long? Over 60 years now, Hisham?
Well, yes.
Altogether?
Yes, altogether 60 years. But what's more important than these little boys being shot, because no one cares about little boys being shot. What is more important now is Israel is splitting a people, completely disengaging them. And as a matter of fact, you will notice that Western media is beginning more and more to use the term Gazans instead of Palestinians.
Yes, of course.
On the other hand, clever
move, not too hard to figure out, but that's the name game again.
On the other hand, you don't hear them saying West Bankers. You never heard that term before, West Bankers.
Right.
But you have heard Gazans, and that's exactly what Israel's plan is, to have Gaza a totally different state, has nothing to do with the West Bank, has nothing to do with the Palestinians in the West Bank. And this way, Israel has only about 1.5 to 2 million Palestinians to deal with in the West Bank. That's already caging them in all these different cities,
right,
with a wall around them.
Right.
That way, they don't have to deal with Gaza. Gaza, they're done with. Now they will have, you know, Hamasistan, or call it whatever you want to call it.
Hamasistan, yeah.
And then they will talk to Mahmoud Abbas and people in the Palestinians in the West Bank, come up with some type of formula to basically neutralize the Palestinian cause, which has been going on for 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the problem for the Palestinians is, number one, the states, the Arab states that 20 years ago used to be in war with Israel, they're no longer in war with Israel. They are more of collaborators with Israel now.
Right.
Because as we have seen, Egypt is definitely a collaborator with Israel, even though, because if Egypt was not a collaborator, when Israel had a siege on Gaza, Egypt could have opened up those borders, that border crossings, and let supplies come in. But they did not. It was until after they had 50 or 60,000 people in there. I mean, what are they going to do? Kill these people? No. Have cameras rolling when the Egyptian police clubbing these Palestinians? No, they're not going to do that. So they allowed them to come in. And, you know, we've talked about in the beginning of the program what the President Hosni Mubarak of Egypt said. Let them come in to eat and take food back with them, as if these people were animals in a barn. Just open up the gates of the barn, let these animals come out to eat, and then let them go back in the barn. And that's exactly what Egypt has done. Most Palestinians have went back. The danger in this, Jeff, is Israel is splitting the Palestinians geographically and demographically. Now you're going to have people known as Gazans, and the ones in the West Bank is going to have some sort of autonomy there, probably within each one of these cantons in the West Bank.
Well, they're fracturing their identity now, formally,
yeah,
and in the media and everything else. Sure. Ah, well, I get it. All right, so things are, and we look back at that absurd, that insulting Annapolis charade, and how many others before that, and we look to the future, and this horrible cretin in the White House continues to talk about a peace plan. And how many years have we heard a peace plan? There's not going to be a peace plan. I think you've said it very well. The idea is to fracture and cut the Palestinian people up into small, very manageable portions. And through attrition and other techniques, they'll be just basically reduced to next to nothing.
You know, the sad thing, Jeff, is Bush was there at the same time when this operation started. As a matter of fact, he was in Saudi Arabia when Israel very much started this last charade. So it is sad, because this man should not have been received by these Arab capitals and Arab kings and princes, because this man is a murderer. The man we have in... How could a man who killed 1 million Iraqis be a peace man and be someone who cares about peace between Israel and the Palestinians? It is absurd to even think of this man as being someone who even knows how to spell peace.
I agree. Well, he may not, by the way. Yeah.
And when he said that he has a vision of two states, right away I said he means two Palestinian states. And what we see now, and I think I've said this on your show, mm-hmm. and I've said it on my show, Current Issues, if you don't mind me just giving the website.
Please do. Current Issues, go ahead.
.tv.
Yep.
And I said that this man's vision is not to have two states as Israel and Palestine, but to have two Palestinians, and that's exactly what we are facing right now.
I think you nailed it. You did. There was a story today. Also, it's at Rents.com. You can see it. There are, as I said, Jews of heart and conscience, ex-IDF, we call them IOF, the Israeli Occupation Forces, ex-IDF offenses, ex-soldiers, Israeli soldiers now have come forward and they're exposing Israeli atrocities. They can't live with themselves. And there's a video of that up. It's in the second news block. You'll see that. Why is it important, Hesham, for Americans to understand and to learn about this issue? Well, a lot of people say, well, all right, we got our own problems. Why is this one any more important than anything else? And if
well,
for anyone
you know
even
what?
To ask that is appalling. But, I mean, let's give them an answer here.
Well, you know what? I agree with them. They are 100% right. You know, why worry about this? We're not even worried about our own future here and about our own country. You know, why worry about this little these little people there called Palestinians? You know, when the country itself is going down the drain and they're not doing anything about it.
Correct. Yeah. All right, hold on. We'll have a chance to answer that more fully in just a minute as we continue. Don't forget our website for you, rents.com. That's R-E-N-S-E.com. We think we have the most viable presentation of real news of any website on the Internet. And thanks to all of you, we continue to put our best foot forward 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Back in just a minute. Stay right there. Today, Egypt may, quote, normalize relations with Iran. What does that mean? Anything?
If I may, Jeff, of course, you know, I had answered your question earlier, if you give me an opportunity to actually answer the question this time.
Sure.
The question that you had to ask me, why should Americans care?
Right. Sorry, I didn't get a chance to get that done right. Very good.
Yeah, because, I mean, I had given you an answer, more of a facetious answer than a real answer. It's real, facetious, but real, but true. But why Americans should care, because even though our government does not know anything about dignity, morality, or justice, the American people still do believe in those values, and more than that, we are paying for Israel to kill the Palestinians. The American taxpayer is paying every penny that Israel's spending on killing the Palestinians, humiliating these people, destroying their lives, killing children, pulling the plug of on babies in incubators and people on dialysis machines. That's why Americans should care, because they are paying for all that. And now, going back to normalizing relations with Iran, the whole thing is a charade. It's not just Egypt that's talking about normalizing relationship with Iran. Even Condoleezza Rice last week said, oh, if the Iranians would stop doing whatever they're doing, that we will normalize relationship with them. So the whole thing is a charade.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Egypt was never really, there was relationship with Iran. So I don't know what they're talking about when they say normalizing relationships with Iran.
Well, whatever, they never broke relations off completely.
No. They always had relations between Egypt and Iran. Now, they did break off these relationships when Iraq was in the middle of a war with Iran. This was back in the 80s. But then after that, relations were okay with Iran. Now, probably talking about, exchanging ambassadors, et cetera, and having more and more. Because Iran right now is basically Iranian politics is taken over in the Middle East. What we wanted to prevent, actually, our actions and our behavior in the Middle East is allowing the Iranians to very much take over. They were in Saudi Arabia, in the Gulf countries. Saudi Arabia told Bush that, hey, look, we don't have any problem with Iran. When Bush went to Kuwait, Kuwait, the country that his father supposedly liberated and gave it back to the Sabah family, which is the ruling family of Kuwait. The next day, right after Bush left Kuwait, the Kuwaiti foreign minister jumped into Iran. He was in Iran while George Bush was in Saudi Arabia. And he said that the foreign minister in Tehran, the Kuwaiti foreign minister, he said that Iran is a friendly country. We don't have any problems with Iran. Bush, of course, went down there wanting to gather support for these Arab countries in the Gulf to basically take a stand against Iran, and they refuse to take a stand against Iran. So that's what we have done. We killed Saddam Hussein. We destroyed Iraq, the country that was the front line and the against Iran and the spread of the Iranian Revolution. That
mm-hmm.
was the,
mm-hmm.
the stuff that we always said we want to stop and prevent.
Right.
And now we wonder, why Iran is so strong? Well, of course, and why Iran is basically thumping his nose at the United States, well, because we did it.
All true. Is the current world financial crisis going to impact the Middle East in any particular way that will change the geopolitics there?
Well, of course. It's not just the Middle East. Not just the current world financial crisis. It's the United States financial crisis. And the problem is that the world had allowed the dollar to be the currency of the world. So, the war that people in the United States don't see yet, and it's right there, and we are being defeated very much so in this war, is the economic war. Now, some of these people out there in the world are moving away from the American economic situation and the connection with the dollar. Once that takes place and it's completed, we're done. We're done. We're going to have boxes full of dollars coming back that's not even worth to ship them. And of course it will hurt a lot of countries that are 100% and they can't get rid of. Like, for instance, Jordan. Jordan is 100% tangled with the dollar. When the dollar goes down, Jordan's going to go down. All these countries, and there are many, many countries in the world that are tangled up so much with the dollar, they don't have the freedom that Venezuela has or Iran has, which is basically to go to the euro or go to the yen or go somewhere else. These countries will be basically destroyed. And are mm-hmm. we going to see some geopolitical changes? Sure, sure, because the economy is what rules the world now. Not these political borders that were put on by God knows who. But, yes, I agree with your statement that are we going to see some change in geopolitical changes? Of course.
Well, the current Middle East, of course, was a fabrication, a creation of British Petroleum and the Rothschild family after World War One, and it is it's actually overdue for some major changes. They're trying to, of course, split up what's left of Iraq into three portions, and Do you think at this point in time, Hisham, that Bush, Cheney, and his Zionist handlers are going to actually attack Iran before he leaves office? What's your latest feeling on that?
You know, I always said that we will not attack Iran.
You have said that. I'd be first to vouch for you.
And I still say we will not attack Iran, even though when almost, like I would say last year, 2007, those who were saying we're not going to attack started saying, yes, we will. And I kind of started, maybe, but I just can't see us. I just can't see us committing a suicide. I just can't see it. And everybody says, well, we have an idiot in the White House. We have this. It's like, well, yeah, he's an idiot, but I don't think he's crazy. And I hope I will not be proven wrong, because if I am proven wrong, we will have a huge disaster. And, you know, what the NIE, the National Intelligence Estimate that came out, even though some people say, oh, it's rebellion inside the intelligence community. No, this was very much, and I think we talked about this last time, I don't know if we did or not, but very much we backed down because Russia had said, that any attack on Iran is an attack on Russia, and Putin said this, that something happened, and we had to find a way to back down, and the only way is blame it on the intelligence community and say that because George Bush could not do it himself because his handlers will not allow him to do it. Now, if it was up to his handlers, which is the Israelis and the Zionists, of course they want us to destroy Iran. But somehow somebody put some sense into him and said, look, if we go, Russia is going to enter this fight and we can't afford this. And we can't afford it. We can't even afford it even if Russia does not enter this fight. You know, Russia has a vital interest in Iran. Russia is right there. They have a lot of interest, vital interest. Russia will not allow anyone to attack Iran, not because they love the Iranians, but because they have vital interests with Iran. And we backed down. That was the day that NIE, the National Intelligence Estimate, is the day when America backed down.
Right. Well, it certainly threw a wrench into the works, that's for sure.
Yes. A lot of people still,
now, people also, excuse me, but that NIE was the result, by the way, of I think it was close to 24 different intelligence agencies and study groups. It wasn't just one organization that put that report forward.
Yeah, but it's that those are the same organizations that a couple of years back were saying that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction.
Right.
Those were the same organization that lied, and those are the same organizations that in 2005 they said that Iran did have weapons of mass destruction, and Iran 100% sure these organizations said that beyond any doubt that Iran has a weapons program. 2 years later, they say, oh, no, they did not have a weapons program. I don't believe it. I don't believe that this was a rebellion. Now, I might be probably one of the few people who don't believe that. There are a lot of people out there saying that, oh, yeah, we have, you know, some people who started. No, I don't believe it. I just think we had to find a way to back down, and we backed down without blaming the White House and without blaming the administration of backing down, because the handlers will not accept the administration to back down. That's my own analysis. If we have to find a way to push off these handlers, which is the Zionists, of why we're not attacking Iran. And believe me, no one in the Middle East will dare, like Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, all these people, Egypt, Jordan, no one will dare go against the United States, but we've seen Bush go in there to tell his handlers, look, the Arabs don't even want to come with us on this thing. So in a way, what the Kuwaitis and everybody in the Gulf area has done, and they even invited Ahmadinejad to come and sit down within their summit, the Gulf Cooperation Council summit. They will not do this if the United States did not tell them, hey, it's okay for you to do it. Because our policy is we want to try to create some actions out there to prevent us from actually attacking Iran, so we can tell our handlers, hey, we can't do it. So I'm still thinking that we will not attack Iran because it will be a suicide for us. There's nothing in it for us. It's for Israel.
All right. Very good. Hisham, thank you. I'll see you next month. And in the meantime, stay well. And thank you again for your contributions and all of your work. Give your URL address again for your fine television program.
At www.currentissues.tv. And thanks for having me.
Yes. My pleasure. Take care.
Thanks.
All right, we're going to pause, and we're going next to England. Talk to two fascinating gentlemen. So stay tuned for that. Lots ahead.